Queen ushers us in every week.
Blog Talk Radio.
She wasn't 90.
Good evening and welcome to Comic-Con Stars. This is Dr. John. It is good to be here tonight on a Thursday night. Beautiful, sunny in Myrtle Beach and everywhere else in our world. Glad to have you with us. Tonight we've got our buddy Will Williams, who's got a lot of great news coming from the Boxing Hall of Fame in Los Angeles. And so I'm going to get started right now. My plug is that I will be, along with Cody and Carolina Caricatures, this weekend. It is the International World Caricature and Comic Hall of Fame Day. It is Free Comic Book Day, May the 5th. We're going to be at Captain's Comics, West Ashley, Charleston. Dave Atwell, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing better than fantastic. Still on the backside of celebrating birth week. Turned a ripe old 21 for the 27th time yesterday. So enjoying that.
Happy birthday. And you did.
Hey, man, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to tell you something, and not just saying this to be corny. You know, I look at all the, the birthday messages and everything yesterday, and I'm looking at it, and I'm seeing folks from high school. I'm seeing, you know, folks from the work crowd, and then I'm looking, and I'm seeing, you know, authors and actors, singers, and, con promoters and all that kind of good stuff on there. And as I kind of, you know, try to go through and say thanks to everybody and certainly appreciate all the messages. Like, kind of step back and you kind of have that moment of reflection. You go, you know what? As George Washington had said something about, if you value your own esteem, hang out with people of high esteem. I think I've done it. So I got one hell of a nice collection of friends. And it was very humbling to get all those messages last night. And I tell you, it's I am the luckiest man on the planet by far. So thanks, everybody. Still enjoying it. I'm burning one of my favorite cigars right now and having an adult beverage out here in the backyard. And I'm telling you, I could keep living like this forever. So it was nice to have a couple back-to-back good days. And, again, appreciate all the greetings and the warm wishes. It does mean the world and picks you up when you need it the most, you know?
Well,
yeah.
We are glad to have you as part of our crowd. And congratulations from Comic-Con Stars on another birthday. We hope to have many, many more with you here right on Thursday night at 9 p.m. So congratulations. Happy birthday, Dave Atwell. And now, Dave, where will you, on Free Comic Book Day this Saturday, where will you be?
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to be at work now. Things kind of took a turn for the worse schedule-wise.
The heck with you?
So, I had to cancel out the library, which is heartbreaking because I know Nicole's a fantastic young lady and does a real, real good job out there in the at the library there in Kinston. But unfortunately, the need to stay gainfully employed and keep the water running and the lights on always takes front seat to any type of pleasure. So, had to back out. So I'll be spending Free Comic Book Day beating my head through a wall at work.
Okay, well, we're glad you're still alive and happy birthday and enjoy Free Comic Book Day at work. So, that'll be we'll send you best wishes.
One way or another. Yep.
You got it. Now, tonight, Pop Stroh is having dinner with the president of the Cauliflower Alley Club. Greg Bowe is getting ready for Free Comic Book Day at Richard's Comics in Greenville. He has got a massive amount of work to do because he has a lot of drawings and commissions he's got to get done. So he's on special assignment tonight. Papa Stroh is, of course, the Cauliflower Alley Club president, and Dave, you and I are here. We are carrying the torch until next week, but we've got a great guest to carry the torch with. He is none other than one of our one of our best friends, Will Williams. Will, how are you doing tonight?
I tell you what, I'm awesome. Dave just mentioned he's the luckiest man on the planet. I guess that makes me the second luckiest man on the planet then.
Well, some fight.
Because I know what you mean about the and with the birthday wishes and everything, and now I feel bad because some days I'm not able to go up there and wish everybody a happy birthday on Facebook, you know what I mean? And then I realized when it was my birthday, I paid attention and saw the people and all that were posting, and I was like, man, that's very nice of them. And, I mean, Dave, that meant a lot to me. You called me
absolutely
that night, and we chatted and caught up, had some good convo. But I think Dave and I turned about the same age this year.
Exactly.
Only one week apart.
Absolutely. And then what's even scarier is that our moms have the exact same birthday. That's right.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, dude, that was crazy,
yeah.
Man. I remember you on Facebook, I posted like something about my mom's birthday, and you were like, happy birthday to her. And then I was scrolling my feed, and it was your mom. Like, you were had made a post about your mom's birthday. I was like, holy crap.
Absolutely.
Man, what's the chances of that? That's crazy.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's great. Two brothers got two moms on the same date. That's awesome. And
absolutely.
Well, you know, we're glad you're here tonight because you are working on an incredible project that has put you at the forefront of world boxing. It really has. Now, you're working on the Jack Johnson project, and you have been in Los Angeles. So tell us what's going on in the boxing world in Los Angeles.
Well, it was an awesome time. My partner on the project, Aaron Snowell, he was a boxing trainer for close to 30 years. And he trained most of Don and Carl King's fighters during that time period. And I think he trained close to, or it was 27 world champions. And by that, I mean, it was 27 that he, like, he won the title with them. And
wow.
He's actually the youngest, at the time, he was the youngest trainer in history to help a heavyweight win the world title. He was only like 24 years old, like in 1984 when he trained Tim Witherspoon to win the heavyweight title.
Oh, wow.
But yeah. And anyway, he got inducted into the National Boxing Hall of Fame last week. So I went out there to support him. And, you know, it all tied in together with the Jack Johnson project. And it was just mind-blowing because here I was sitting with, you know, the who's who of the boxing world. Sitting right beside me was Carl King, which is Don King's son, who is a boxing promoter. And the table beside me was Muhammad Ali's family because he was getting inducted as well. The other table was Boudini Brown's family, which Boudini was the trainer for Muhammad Ali. Christy Martin was there. She was a great women's champion. And if you don't know much about her story, she was a women's champion, and she actually, her husband shot and stabbed her. I forget what year it was, and left her for dead in their house. He went to take a shower, and while he was showering, she crawled out of the house and crawled out into the yard, and luckily somebody saw her, put her in the car, drove her to the hospital and that saved her life. And she ended up coming back to fight after that. But she was inducted. Just a whole great group of inductees. It was just a very surreal experience.
Wow, that is great. Now, tell us, you and I had coffee the other week. It was great getting to sit down and talk with you for a couple hours. And you told me the great story of how you met Aaron Snowell. Do you mind sharing that with us tonight?
Yeah, it's a very unique story in the fact I was caddying for my friend in a professional golf tournament. And when he was warming up on the driving range, another player mentioned to my friend, he said, "Hey, you see that volunteer over there? He used to train Mike Tyson." So I looked over, and there was this guy just standing there. I mean, just looked completely relaxed, just enjoying himself, saying hey to everyone. And I was like, I got to go talk to this guy. So I went up to him, and I was like, "Hey, excuse me, did you use to train Mike Tyson?" And he's very humble. You know, it's not like, "Oh, yeah, man, It was just like, you know, he kind of nodded his head like, yeah, I used to train him. And then he started talking to him, and he's trained pretty much every fighter you can think of just about. And to be honest, at first I thought, man, there's no way. There's got to be some kind of exaggeration. But when I went and looked on YouTube initially, I mean, you see him right in there walking with Mike Tyson into the ring. This was like the late 80s and early 90s. And he was even the trainer when Tyson considered one of the biggest sports upsets when he lost to Buster Douglas. So they experienced the agony of defeat on that. But anyway, we got to talking for a couple of days, and something told me to ask him if he would teach me. And I asked him, and he said, yeah.
What?
And he was like, what was that?
I said, wow. I mean, that's incredible to ask him to teach you.
Yeah, and I was like, man, this guy's going to think I'm nuts. And he said, yeah, I'll teach you some things. I got, you know, I'm doing some youth camps and stuff for the next couple of weeks, but I'll get back to you. And I'm thinking, oh, that means I'm never going to hear from him or something like that. And then the next day I get a call from one of my friends, and he says, hey, that Aaron guy just came by and dropped off some wrist wraps for you and left some instructions on how to put the wrist wraps on. And next thing you know, Aaron was calling me three times a day. I would go to his house. It was just like Karate Kid with Mr. Miyagi and Danielson. I'd go to his house. He'd open the garage. And at first he had me doing these things where I'm like, kind of like the wax on, wax off when Mr. Miyagi has Danielson waxing his cars. And it's like, why are you? But he had me doing these, like, you know, just walking around, jump rope. And then we never threw a punch for the longest time. And then finally one day he took me out on the road. And, man, it just all came together, just like with Karate Kid when he starts, you know, telling them how it all comes together. And next thing you know, I'm skipping around like feeling like Muhammad Ali. I'm like, wow, man, I guess you do know what you're talking about. But, yeah, it was just, and you know what's interesting, John, is he mentioned he didn't get a chance because they were short on time at the event. But he mentioned that I actually lit a spark in him that day when I asked him to train me, because he had retired about 5 years before and had kind of, you know, kind of gotten away from it a little bit, I mean, he's doing a lot of volunteer work. And he said me asking him lit a fire in him to get back into it and to start, you know, not training, you know, for the titles anymore, but just, you know, teaching me and getting back involved with the whole sport. And he said I was kind of the catalyst that started it, which I thought was pretty cool.
Absolutely. Well, that's wonderful. Now, about, is it okay to ask, about how old is he right now?
He is 50, he's right around 57 or 58. So he grew up around Muhammad Ali at Muhammad Ali's training camp. So he was around Ali ever since he was, you know, a little teenager. And he started training fighters and you know, when he was like 19, 20 years old.
Wow.
So he got a major head start. And one of his fighters, was Nate Jones, that he trained, and also gives advice to about training, because Nate Jones is actually one of Floyd Mayweather's trainers now.
Wow.
So Nate and Aaron constantly talk, and, you know, and then Nate will kind of use Aaron's advice while working with Floyd.
There was a guy who lived down the street from my folks' house when I was a teenager, and he was in the Corps with my dad. His name was Percy Price, and he actually beat Muhammad Ali when they were, before Ali, of course, went big, but when they were trying out for the Olympics, I think it was 66, 68, something like that. He beat Muhammad Ali. So we always saw him sitting out there on the end. He was, you know, retired Marine Corps by the time, you know, I had met him. And, you know, when I was a teen, I used to always go up and down, mow yards, clean gutters, trim bushes, you know, chop wood, whatever somebody needed, you know, pick up some bucks. So he's sitting on his porch, drink beer and everything. And so one day I went up there and asked him, I said, you know, we're all kind of scared of Mr. Price because he was just a big guy, you know. And he says, yeah, you know, I need this done, but you better be right. Better be right. You ain't getting nothing out of me. I was like, oh, Jesus, you know, the heat's on, you know. So I'm out there working in the yard, and he pulls the garage door up, and there's a heavy bag and a speed bag in there. And he says, you watch boxing? And I says, yeah, because I was always a big Marvin Hagler guy back in the day, you know, before Tyson came along. And we got to talking. Well, next thing you know, he's in there, you know, and I think I was about a 14-year-old kid. He starts, you know, hey, go ahead and lay on that bag. You play ball, don't you? I was like, yeah, sir. He said, oh, lay on that bag. Let me show you how to do this. So, I take a couple licks on this heavy bag and everything. You know, I might have weighed, you know, 80 pounds on a good afternoon. He said, well, let me show you something. And I got out of the way, and when that guy hit that bag, I'm here to tell you, it was one of those things where you just kind of step back and said, Jesus Christ, man. You know, I mean, you almost want to run for your life. Because when he hit that bag, I'm here to tell you, you could just feel the energy coming off of that bag when he hit it. And up until the day he died, he was always good about having the neighborhood kids over there thumping on the bag and telling them stories and everything. And, I'm glad I had the experience. It was something, it was just neat listening to his stories and everything more than anything.
Man, that's really incredible, man.
It really is, Dave. I had no idea. And you know, it's a wonderful part of Americana when you can meet a great athlete and become part of their lives. I had that happen to me with golf with the great Billy Joe Patton, who almost won the Masters in 1954. Come to find out, he used to date my mother back in Morganton, North Carolina.
Wow.
And it was just it was amazing. I got to play golf with him. I didn't know why he was so kind to play golf with me when I was a kid in high school. Found out he was just good friends with my parents, and you know, some of the greatest moments of my life were watching him play. And it's like, you know, to have these experiences is something that really, really can change your life. I'll never forget those stories talking to him and how he would yell at me and scream at me about getting better, and I really appreciated it. So, you know, we're all, at least the three of us, are very fortunate that we've had great athletes that we've been able to train with or play with competitively or whatever. I mean, it's just been great. So now, Will, how long were you out in Los Angeles? When did you go there? When did you come back? And did you do anything? And what other great tidbits do you have from the from your experience out there with us?
Well, I went out there on Thursday last week, the 26th, and the first event they had kind of like the induction was on Saturday, the 28th. And the 27th that evening, they had like a, you know, like a pre-ceremony party type deal. And it was actually very stressful for me on Thursday. And Dave, you'll know what I'm talking about when I say it. I got out there Thursday morning, and there was a drawing, a portrait I wanted to, that I had been working on, of Aaron, that I wanted to give to him as a gift.
You killed it too, dude.
Oh, thanks, man. It just, I don't know if people, I don't think people realize like how long some of that stuff can take when you're trying to do certain little details, and I had a lot of it done, and it was just stressful bringing it from North Carolina to L.A. I had it rolled up in a tube there, and then I'm at the place I'm staying at, and I'm like, crap, there's a couple more supplies I need. So I found an art store that was within walking distance. I got those supplies. And then I cut it. I mean, I worked on it all day Thursday. Then Friday, I worked on it most of the day, and I was stressing out because there was a couple of features that I just couldn't get right, and I didn't really, you know, I felt under the gun because time was ticking. Meanwhile, Aaron had no idea that I was doing this, but he kept calling me, and I got there a day before he did. He kept calling me, being like, "Hey, where are you?" And I'm. and I'm sitting, and you know, it didn't make sense. I'm sitting there like, "Hey, man, I'm busy right now. You'll see why." You know, so I had to keep it a secret, but it didn't make sense to him because he's like, "Well, the whole reason you came out here is for this. What do you mean you're busy?" So, man, I got it done at the very last minute, and then I ran over to the art store and got the right frame for it. Also, I had to go over there and get it, like, cut to the right size to fit the frame because the board I drew it on was a little, you know, the dimensions were a little bit different than most frames. So I got it. It was stressful getting it done, but it was worth it in the long run. I mean, it meant a lot to him. And that's what it was all about.
That's awesome. That thing came out great too, man. And, you know, again, that's another one of those things where I talk about writing, how everybody thinks it's a big romantic, you know, and everything just flows beautifully while I blow on my hot cup of coffee. Man, it's nothing to do with that. I'm trying to do this thing for my mom. And I'm here to tell you, I probably haven't cussed that much since I tried to put the furniture together. I mean, and, it, you know, it's supposed to be relaxing, and you're walking around the house. I can't believe, you know, you ink something wrong, or the dog walks into you while you're inking, and, you know, all the way across it.
Yeah.
And Dude, I'm telling you, it'll set you right. And especially when you're trying to do it, if you're just farting around, you're sitting down there and whap, 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 just do something. I mean, it's like straight up Picasso. But when you're actually trying to do something for somebody with the goodness of your heart, and you're actually trying to not show off your talent, but to try to do your absolute 1,000,000% best, because
right.
that person means so much to you. Man, the amount of stress.
Yeah, and it would have been stressful for me if I would have had if I didn't even have a time constraint. But just the fact that I was down to crunch time, and things weren't, you know, little things like getting the teeth right and everything.
Yeah.
It was just, I mean, I had to call my sister. I mean, I really about had a nervous breakdown. I was like, Lauren, you got to talk to me. You got to calm me down a little bit. I'm about to freak out. But luckily, but you know what? It's weird.
It looked great.
Thanks, man. I'm like that with every drawing and everything. It's almost like I love it, and then when I get to the final details, I hate it. I hate, I guess it's the same with, writing a book. When the first draft's probably, what feels good, but then when you're down to, constantly editing and getting to, the fine details,
yeah.
That's... And I'm like that with every drawing. I'm like, man, I'm never drawing again. It's almost like a little piece of me dies with each one, with each drawing. But what's funny is I can't let it, the next day I'm like, I gotta draw. I'm ready to start something new. You know, when the day before I'm like, man, I'm never gonna draw anything ever again.
Yeah, sometimes it's just a matter of setting it down. I don't know if you've ever been, and, you know, if you lose your car keys and you've looked all over the place, if, you know, I've seen people bounce off the walls trying to find their car keys. If you just stop, just sit down for a minute and then go back to it, you know, you get hung up on a crossword puzzle and you're like, man, I can't get anywhere on this. You set it down, a couple hours later you come back to it, you burn right through it. It's the same way, I know.
Yeah.
With my art, I have a habit of taking everything I do, and before I go to bed that night, I'll lay it on top of my laptop, and I'll put my eyeglasses next to it, so when I get up in the morning, I'll look at it. I won't look at the art, but I'll grab my glasses, I'll put them on, and then right at it. And there's a lot of times I go to bed just totally defeated, you know, where I'm like, God, man, you know.
Yeah.
My grandkids do better than I do. And then I look at it the next morning, and I'm like, hold on, dude, I'm on to something here. You know, you just got to sometimes the passion and perfection that goes into the madness of being an artist of any type, sometimes you've got to just let it be for a little bit and come back and look at it and understand that perfection is already there. You know what I mean?
I 100% agree. A lot of times when I'm drawing, what I'll do is step away. I'll go get in my car and just drive around for a little bit, get my mind off of it, take my eyes off of it. And a lot of times, for instance, with Aaron's portrait, I didn't know how I'm not a classically trained artist. You know, I didn't grow up taking art classes. So a lot of things is just whatever makes sense to me, what I do. And I didn't know how I was going to pull off his hair with the type of kind of fro that he had.
Yeah.
How I would make it look realistic. And man, I swear, I just kind of slept on it. And then the next day, a method that I never would have, that I never thought of, just kind of popped in my head, and I was like, oh crap, let me try this. And it was I couldn't have asked for anything better. It turned out perfect.
And you never would have gotten it had you not just walked away from it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It, sometimes it takes that.
I agree.
But I tell you what, man,
you
your heart
well,
is knocking it dead, man. Looks good.
Thanks, man. It's
yeah. Well, you're doing some great artwork, and that's one thing that a lot of people don't know about you. Along with you being a producer, a director, and an actor, and winning at all that, winning the Hope Film Festival for No Child, you're a heck of an artist, a drawing artist. So we're pleased. We're pleased to see your career moving forward in a number of different ways. We really do. So, and speaking of your career moving along in different ways, do you mind giving us kind of a little bit of a background on the Jack Johnson project? How has that been going? How did that get started? And where are we right now? Will, do you mind telling us that?
Yeah, so how I got started was just from Aaron and I, you know, when we became friends and started training together, and then he found out that, you know, I like doing film work and everything, and then he got interested in that, and then it was like, hey, well, we should make something, and it was his idea. He was like, I knew the perfect person, Jack Johnson. He was the first African-American heavyweight champion, and he actually died right outside of Raleigh in a car crash passing through town. And the town it was in Franklinton, and it's actually, that's where Aaron's mother was born and grew up. So Aaron kind of had like a, you know, there was kind of like a piece of him with that story, you know, where it meant even more. And so we started assembling a team and working on it. And we actually got eyewitness interviews to the car crash, which happened in 1946. These people are in their 80s, but they were like, you know, 10 years old at the time. And they saw firsthand the car crash. And we got an interview with the tow truck driver who towed the car to his dad's auto body shop. Interview with the coroner's son. And we got interviews with all kinds of boxing legends. We interviewed with Don King. It's moving along great, but it's kind of one of those things that's like cooking a chicken. You know, like we could make something really quick. Like you could take chicken, throw it in the microwave and cook it. Or you can marinate it, put it on the grill, slow cook it. Which one's gonna be better? The one that you put on the grill and take your time with. And that's kind of how it is with this film. With each event that comes around, it just adds more value to our project. And so it's one of those things that just keeps getting better with time, that we can't rush it. We're just getting more and more things with each event. So it's moving along nicely.
Well, that's great. That's really great to hear. And We look forward to a lot of great things when that project has been finished. Now, again, one thing that I spoke about a little bit earlier that a lot of people might not know is you are a highly decorated film producer, director, and star. Now, tell us a little bit about your No Child project, and what are some of the major film awards that No Child and you have won? Because I think for those that don't really know you a lot like Dave and I do, you know, they'll be pleasantly surprised to know the great things that you have done. And I know one of the biggest shocks when you and I were just talking on the phone is maybe 6-7 months ago, you said, oh, by the way, John, just found out that I won Best Film at the Hope Film Festival. And I was just shocked. I mean, that's a major film festival in Texas. So tell us a little bit about that project, which I think is your first major, major project to garner a lot of awards. Is it not, Will?
Yeah, so that I owe a lot of credit to Rob Underhill on that project because I knew of Rob. I had this idea for a film. I knew of Rob, heard great things about him, and I sent him an email. I mean, this was years ago. And I felt like, you know, the typical, you'll see what I'm saying. I emailed him. I'm like, hey, you don't know me, but I got an idea for a movie. And I mean, I felt like, you know, that somebody like that hears that time, like, everybody's got an idea, you know. And I remember he said, send me the script. I said, there's actually not one, but it's a good idea. How about we meet for lunch? And I feel like the line that sold him, and I've learned to use this line with people and they take you more serious, is if you just say, I promise I will not waste your time. And it usually works. And for him, it did work. And we ended up meeting. I told him the idea. And he ended up pretty much writing the whole script. I wrote a few things. I added a few ideas. The script was quite different than my original idea, but it was still along the same lines. And then Rob directed it and played the lead along with Timmy Richardson, who's done very well. He's on one of the Tyler Perry shows, been on Little Big Shots. He was the youngest drum major in the nation at one time for Shaw University. And, you know, we had a lot of good success on the film festival circuit. We won Los Angeles Cinefest. We won the Black Cinema Film Festival in Berlin, Germany. We won Best Film. We got nominated at the Short Film Awards. We won the Best Feature at the Hope Film Awards, which was cool because our film is a weird length, like 43 minutes. So some festivals is considered a short and some is considered a feature. But a lot of times if you're in the feature category, you're at a disadvantage because the judges are going to say, well, you know, this 90-minute film, they put a lot more into it than this 43-minute film. But it made me feel validated because made me feel like we got our message across in the time, the 43 minutes. And I'm trying to think of what others that I have mentioned. The South Carolina Cultural Film Festival, and it's pretty cool. I actually got Best Actor at that one. That was unexpected. So that meant a lot to me. And then Shorts TV ended up picking up the film. And what's really cool is I didn't get the channel at my house, but my grandma had the channel. And when it first premiered, my grandparents and my mom and dad went over to my grandparents' house, and they were able to watch my film on TV. So that was a pretty cool milestone. And they actually played it in the block of best selected short films. So that was really cool.
Those are some great awards, great accomplishments. Will Williams, that's one reason we're very proud to have you. Well, you're a friend because you're a great guy, but you've got some marvelous accomplishments, and we are thrilled at what you've done. So, you know, keep up the good work. We know the Jack Johnson project, that's going to be a real landmark when it comes out. And we're looking at, what, maybe a year, year and a half for that one to finish. Would that be a fair estimate of the
time? Yeah, there's no telling because there's multiple ideas we have. There's a few different tiers that this project could take on. I'm not going to say too much about that, but
No, you can't. But you know, still, there are a lot of great things that can happen with this project. And you know, Jack Johnson is, a lot of people may not know, was the first black world heavyweight boxing champion, and he truly died under some mysterious circumstances, did he not?
He did, but if you read a textbook or look on the internet, it won't seem that mysterious, but from information we gathered, also known as our interviews from eyewitnesses, there were a few questions that were raised that the history books might not exactly be correct in what they have written in them. So,
well, I can tell you a lot of history books are not correct. They are politically correct, but they're not factually correct. So we will leave that discussion now and know that you and your crew and your group will put together an absolutely wonderful documentary on the life of Jack Johnson, and hopefully Comic-Con stars and all of our other outlets at our Comic-Cons will be able to help promote that when it comes out. We're looking forward to that. And so what other you're an artist, as in a visual artist. You're a producer, director, actor. What else is going on in the life of Will Williams right now?
You know what? That's something I'm trying to figure out myself. I mean, it's still weird. I never really considered myself. I never knew I was an artist. You know what I mean? Growing up, I never. The only thing that made sense. I despised writing growing up, but I was always good at it. Like, I always, you know, writing tests, I always got, like, you know, top tier grades on that. But I didn't like it. And I started writing after college, and I was like, I really like this. But I figured out why I didn't like it in school, because in school, they're telling you what you have to write about. When it's just like I hated to learn back then, but that's because they're telling you what you have to learn about. I love to learn now because I learn about what I want to learn about, just like I write about what I want to write about. And I hated to read, too. And now I love to read because I read what I want to read about.
Yeah, I want to suggest this. You love learning today about things that matter to you.
Right.
Right. Right.
Absolutely.
Dave Atwell, same thing. You're learning all the time. And like when you did your Jack the Ripper book, didn't you learn a ton about Jack the Ripper? And wasn't it rewarding for you to learn a lot about Jack the Ripper and then be able to use that in your book?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not only is it rewarding when you get done with it, man, but everybody knows the particulars behind, you know, certain events in history and all that kind of jazz. But when you really, you know, you put your back into that shovel and you dig just a little bit deeper on things, and you work out some details on stuff. I mean, it is. For one thing, I've been doing some reading on Rasputin and everything because he's an upcoming victim of the hunger coming up. And what I never knew was that despite his connection with the Romanov family, it was often speculated that he was getting it on with the Queen and that there was actually like tabloid stuff that went around about Rasputin having a relationship, extramarital, of course, with the Queen. And, you know, I'm reading this stuff, and I'm going, okay, well, this was 1912, 1915, 1916. And far cry to what we're up against right now. You know, and it's pretty incredible when you read that stuff and learning the details, because the interesting thing about Rasputin, when you mention him, everybody thinks about this crazy mystic and everything, but there was just so much going on. It was the end. Not only was it the end of a royal lineage, it was also an end of a political affiliation for Russia, because it was ultimately Lenin and the Bolsheviks that overran and became the Communist Party, which led to Stalin. And you know, if you read about Stalin in World War II, I mean, everybody hammers on Hitler all the time, but Stalin was 10 times the killer and maniac that Hitler
was. Dave, it is crazy that you just mentioned that, because before this show started, my buddy and I were just having that conversation about Stalin. Exactly what you said, man. That's so ironic.
But, you know, going back to what John was just saying about the history books are politically distorted, it's true, because if you teach American-taught history, World War II, there was Churchill, there was Roosevelt, there was Stalin against Hitler, Benito Tojo, or Benito Mussolini and Tojo. And, you know, in fact, you know, Stalin was no saint. It's just we don't mention the horrible things he was doing because of the fact he was on our side.
He was an ally.
You know,
right.
Exactly. And the darnest thing about Stalin is that he got so out there when it come down to wiping out his friends and family and everything, where he trusted no one, he had a seizure and died. He had a stroke. And he laid in his room for 2 days before anybody had the balls to walk in there and check on him. You know, it's amazing. And Tojo, something that a lot of folks don't know, because he's another one that's been kind of brushed to the side because of our relationship with the Japanese now. We don't focus much on the horrible things that the Japanese were doing to the Chinese during the World War II era. I mean, you know, they talk about Joseph Mengele and the Holocaust and everything. Man, I tell you what the Japanese were doing to the Chinese was incredible. Some sadistic stuff was going on. But when the Americans were approaching on Tojo's headquarters, he shot himself in the heart. And an American serviceman saved his life. They tried him, and they hung him. I mean, it's an incredible bit of history that, you know, we bypass. But when you start digging into the stuff, you can't help but sit there and scratch your head. And again, like the old saying goes, if you don't heed history, you're doomed to repeat it. There's so much that was happening in these different eras and time that are just so close to what we're going through right now. So, you know, you got to read this stuff, whether you love it or not. Educate yourself. And to Will's point, you know, you go into English class and they're like, okay, we're going to read Romeo and Juliet. I'm like, your mom's going to read Juliet. You know what I mean? It's, you know, I want to read H.G. Wells. Were you reading Shakespeare tonight? Well, all right. So I bang out a robust D on that, you know, part of it. Whereas had we been doing it on H.G. Wells or Jules Verne or something to that effect, I'd ace it, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely, man.
I mean, Dave, you're 100% right, because we are not doomed. We're guaranteed to repeat history. We really are, and that's something that that we need to all realize. I mean, history repeats itself. Economic cycles repeat themselves. It's just amazing. Everyone says how crazy the Donald Trump administration is. Well, you know what? I don't think there's been a presidential administration that hasn't been crazy. The press is after this administration. But the Clinton, my goodness, the Clinton administration, they all had their craziness. And you know, so The more you learn about this one, the more you learn about previews, the more we'll know and be able to handle the next administration, whatever it is, if it's another Trump administration or if it's a or another one. So I think people underestimate history and its importance. So that's a little word for all you folks out there that don't like to read. You need to at least read or check out some YouTube videos about history to see what's going on, because, I mean, it's, as King Solomon said, there is nothing new. Am I correct, Dave?
Oh, absolutely. You are absolutely correct. It's funny. I was over there at Mom and Dad's before I got to the house this evening for the show. I was screeching tires in the driveway to, get on the show tonight. And, my son's got to do a senior project coming up here. And, he was figuring, what do I do? What do I do? I says, go do it on your pop. And, my dad, of course, retired, 30-year sergeant major and everything. He never really talked about what he did. We all knew he was in the Corps, and he'd come home raising hell sometimes about something went on and blah, blah, blah. But I never knew what Dad did, the details, So as, time wears on and he becomes a little more open with it, and I talk to people and know my dad and everything, I'm telling you, I have been just totally taken aback. And I knew my dad was always bad news, but the more I find out, I mean, he's like some straight up Chuck Norris stuff. And but the darnest thing about Dad is when you talk to him about it, he's like, yeah. And to him, he was just doing his job. You know what I mean? But to me, I'm going, Dad, you realize how much tomatoes it took to do something like that? And he's like, had to be done. So, going back to what you're saying originally, when you say, about being humble and not running your mouth about your accomplishments and everything, you walk up and say, hey, I hear you train boxers. And he's like, yeah, matter of fact, I do. So what's going on, man? Those are the guys that seem to be the most interesting to me, because those are the guys who have a true love for the game and not doing it for ego or fame or money or anything else. They're doing it for a genuine love. And, that's why all the respect in the world, my pop, for his patriotism and for the fact that he did a lot of awesome stuff and doesn't think it's awesome. So, told Rob, I said, buddy, I don't even realize what's sitting there in that recliner until one day we just crack his head open and really start talking to him about stuff. And then, he's 71 now, and it's time to start jotting down stuff before it starts to fade. So, it's going to be interesting. Dad is one of those history books that I can't wait to read,
Yeah, man, that's incredible.
Yeah, I think that's a valuable lesson to talk about tonight, is how history repeats itself, how again, good investigation, investigative reporting is leading to a really superior documentary for Jack Johnson, and just staying power and stick-to-itiveness has led to a number of film festival awards. We're proud of you. And we've all worked hard. All three of us on this show have worked hard to get where we are, wherever we are. And Dave is a writer, Will is a filmmaker and artist, and me is I'm not sure what, a guy that puts on Comic-Cons and events and maybe does a little bit of writing. So anyway, I just wanted to say to thank everybody for what they've done. And as I've learned from Papa Stroh, it's plug time. So Dave, we'll start with Dave, then with Will, and then me, and then we'll go forth and conquer. So Dave, what do you have to plug tonight?
Just the usual, keep on with the book series, the Hunger series and everything. I've been getting more into it of late, thank goodness. Work's kind of, though it's been pretty hectic for the last 4 months, things are starting to hopefully come around a little bit, and we can start breathing again. So if you get that moment, go on Amazon, look up the Hunger series, because there's a whole lot of fuel in the engine. I just got to crank and pull it out of the garage and crank it up and get it back on the road. But unfortunately, real world problems, as I call them, and care of all that. But one little bit of good news I'll plug for myself: by this time next week, I will be a genuine homeowner. Not a homeowner like I owe the bank, but like a homeowner. It'll be officially mine. So, another milestone reached.
Congratulations,
man. Yeah, dude, I'm feeling like $1 million. Feet can't hit the ground at the moment, and I'll feel even better once I get a deed in my hand. But, yeah,
more like
pretty
a quarter
amazing
million
feeling,
dollars.
So. Absolutely, absolutely. And for those of you guys that know me, know my son is visually impaired. So it does my heart a lot of good knowing that if I croak in this spot tonight, that young man has got somewhere to stay. And, you guys know that everything changes once you start reproducing. And it's the greatest thing you'll ever do, and it's the hardest thing you'll ever do. So it's nothing but up from here. So there's the plug. And if I can steal a little bit of Will's thunder, if you get a chance, and Will, you got to post this stuff, baby. If you get a chance, check out Will's art, because I'm here to tell you, I am totally impressed. And
I've
known this young man for close to a year now, and I consider him one of my better friends. And I'm telling you, it's absolutely amazing how much this young man's got going for him, and it's just a matter of time before something cracks open, and this guy is going to take off like a supernova. So, y'all check out his films, check out his art, and just check him out, so to speak. And he's a single guy, ladies, so if you want to do that, go right ahead. But amazing young man, and I tell you, I ain't got a rotten thing to say about your brother, so continue on. Well done.
Hey, thanks so much, man. It truly means a lot to me, and, you know, you and I had a great conversation last week on my birthday, and that really meant a lot to me, and I truly appreciate the kind words. And,
yeah, man. I mean,
I'll tell you,
ain't gonna lie.
both of you have been, you know, great, great people and influences in my life. You know, it's like with both you guys, I feel like, I mean, as cheesy as it sounds, but the cliche, like, I feel like I've known you guys forever. Like, whenever I see you, it's like we were old war buddies or something, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that's great when you can have that. And, I mean, thanks for letting me be a part of the show with you guys. It's always awesome. I feel like it's just some shows I've been on, it's like feels very forced, but every time I come on this one, it's just like guys sitting around a bonfire telling stories.
Shoot the breeze.
Everything just everything just flows perfectly.
Well
thanks,
we don't
a
put
lot.
A whole lot of don't put a whole lot of studying behind it, trust me.
Do a little bit.
There's
no
official
yeah.
itinerary.
So Will, what do you have to plug tonight? Just everybody should go watch No Child, right?
Yeah. Check No Child out. Check me out on Facebook. Send me a message. Link up. Chat with you all. Anybody listening? I think I've said pretty much everything about Jack Johnson and all that. So what about you, Doc? What's going on?
Well, about me, I will say check out bishopbill.org, and you can see my column, Lizardman, Bigfoot, and Friends, every week. It's now a regular feature of the Lee County Observer as we're moving toward Lizardman Festival, which will be June 8th, 9th, and 10th. And also check out my book on, if you've got Amazon.com, it's free. Bigfoot and Friends, new stories about cryptids. And we got a big blast coming out, some new neat parapsychological research. So I'm not going to mention that. You just have to check out bishopville.org. So I want to say, on behalf of everyone, Papa Stroh was probably still is having dinner with the head of the Cauliflower Alley Club, one of the great organizations in wrestling history and fellowship out there in Las Vegas. Greg Bowe is on special assignment trying to get ready for Free Comic Book Day at Richards Comics, Greenville, South Carolina. I will be with Cody with Captain's Comic with Ashley in Charleston. Dave will be keeping the lights on. We'll be doing what Will is doing. And we want to say thanks to everybody for listening to Comic-Con Stars. Assuming we don't have a Carrington event, we'll be back next week. Right, Dave?
Yeah, I would certainly hope so, man. Things finally start falling into place, and then we have a Carrington event.
assuming the power grid's up, Comic-Con Stars is back. Hey, Will, thanks a lot. Dave, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Will, thanks a lot. Thanks to all of our friends listening in and everything. And check us out, VSCNation.com. So until next time, it's Dr. John and Dave. And in absentia, Papa Stroh and Greg Bowe saying, see you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Good night, everybody. Will, you the man. Bye.